This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tee Clinic. Men's Tee Clinic is the team I trust with my total wellness optimization, and so should you. Five DFW locations with North Frisco, El Dorado Parkway at Dallas North Tollway now open. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEE or visit menstheeclinic.com.
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105 Through the Fan. We're back in studio. You got me, Kevin Hagland, Corey Majors, the famous Mike Bassick, and the soon-to-be famous Alec Medford. Gentlemen, welcome to the show. How we doing today?
Awesome. Just went through marriage therapy. It was great.
Okay.
You always brag about that so much. I know.
Is that a brag?
Yeah, on your face.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, doing therapy is good.
Do you feel like that brings you guys closer together?
On Zoom, because she's at work, and so we're on the same television set.
Okay, that was my own fault for asking that question.
On your face!
That was my own fault for asking that question. 877-881-1053. If you want to get involved in the program, by the way, a reminder, Peace-a-thon is a week from today. Peace, as in masterpiece, a-thon, like a marathon, is a week from today.
Show them on YouTube what I brought.
No, I will not. Oh, okay.
Gosh, what did you think?
I thought you were talking about that search that you were doing yesterday for the pizza stuff.
No, look, if you're on YouTube or whatever, this is a limited edition print of 500, and Eric Nadell signed it. Ranger fans, you're not dreaming.
And so these aren't all signed, right? He specifically signed it.
You buy them unsigned.
Oh, yeah. And we have the signed one.
I think there was 500 prints of those.
That is correct.
And Eric Nadell signed that one for me and then donating it to Peace-a-thon.
There you go.
No G.
He is, and by the way, Eric is a very charitable fella. He does all kinds of stuff with the Grant Halliburton Foundation and does a lot of work for mental health.
Yeah, he does wonderful stuff, man. This is, I'm excited. Somebody said the punch was weak. All right. I'm really excited about it. It's next Wednesday. We'll start at 6 o'clock in the morning, and we'll roll all the way till 7 p.m., and we'll be here all day for you, and all of our hosts will be coming in at some point throughout the day. Derek Holland will join us for the entirety of the show, just like last year. Is this his third year?
I believe it is.
So we're really excited to have him back, and then Alec will have assistant Peyton on the show during that time. Really looking forward to having an assistant.
Yeah, Alec was always Peyton's boss.
That's
right?
Yeah, pretty much. That's how it was always told to me. Okay. So I'm excited for him.
Do you guys laugh on the Peyton Manning?
I actually do think that commercial is pretty funny.
I think Peyton Manning is underrated.
The Peyton Manning thing? Yeah. I think it's hilarious.
I don't know if somebody writes that for him and he just acts it out and it's great.
I would assume it's that, but I don't know.
I feel like Nationwide, like his Nationwide commercials and Chicken Parm, You Taste So Good. Like he's for years now been a pretty funny guy. His Saturday Night Live was funny where he's pegging all the kids.
Yep. Hitting them with the football. Yeah.
Yeah. Hitting them with the football.
Yeah. No, I don't know. I feel like because of that character, sometimes maybe he really is a sarcastic A, you know, like maybe that is it, but he plays it very well. I really do enjoy it.
Now we're going to start off with a segment from the mind of Corey. And I just thought it was a great idea. Ordinary world versus Cowboys world. So you can give us a number of examples. I have a whole lot of examples as well. Excellent. But first, I'm going to throw this out there. This is cut number 9. I'm not saying this has to be ordinary world versus Cowboys world, but just remember, the Cowboys are 3-7.
Yes. I'm going to put this out there. We're a damn good football team. I know the scores ain't showing it, and I know obviously people feel like we got so many missing pieces, but I just truly believe, like, you almost got to go through things like the things that we messing up on. Like, I think our defense is really turning things around. Like, up until that last quarter when they got that touchdown defense, we only really gave up those two touchdowns in that first quarter. But other than that, we gave up 6 points in the other two quarters.
All right. So let's focus on that last part first.
It's a little confusing.
We only gave up those two touchdowns in the first quarter, which is really terrible, and then 6 points in the other two quarters. That means they gave up 20 points in three quarters. That would push you at about 26.67 points per game or something like that. That's not great. That is not great. So when he says, that was Micah Parsons, of course, we're really turning the corner, I don't totally know. what that's based on, because by the way, if you're at 26.7, that would put you in the bottom five in the league in points allowed per game. But he started off by saying, we're a damn good football team. What is that based on?
I think he's saying that we have talent and it's not living up. I think he did place the reality of, I think we're better than our scores.
And I get that.
And I think when all your pieces are healthy, you are better than what your scores actually have been. You did look out of sorts early in this season, though. And you're a new defense. That's a reason you could look out of sorts. That offense has not helped the defense at all this season.
Oh, totally.
The offense has been... I asked when Cooper Rush had to initially do it, you said, what do you need? And I said, I need them to be ept. That's it. Just ept offensively. Omar. Not even...
Not Omar Epps.
Just decent, because the defense was that good. Yep. And this year, the offense has not been able to carry the weight of the defense trying to figure out and catch up to what they were doing. So I don't agree that they're a damn good football team right now, because as everybody in that organization has told us, you are what your record says you are.
Yeah.
And right now, your record says you're not a damn good football team. And you have to do things to get better. It is a false confidence that I appreciate, too, because you're going to go out there and try and be great. But he's got to fill some space on his podcast. I get it. Right now, they are not a damn good football team.
And by the way, the news of the morning potentially for the Cowboys is they designated both Marshawn Nealon and Brandon Cooks for return.
Okay.
Which means their 21-day practice window has been open. So I'm not saying it still could take this long, but it could still be up to 3 weeks until you get anything.
I'm excited for Marshawn Nealon because I saw some things early in the season that I was like, okay, that's something that can grow into a talented player.
I'm with you because I don't care about Brandon Cooks. He's not going to be a Dallas Cowboy in 2025.
That is probably true.
So what? In fact, probably it doesn't matter, but you probably need to play Mingo as many snaps as possible to see if your fourth round pick now is going to pay off that you have 2 years of control of after this year.
That's true. Sorry. Do you see the appeal of Marshawn Nealon, though? Because
yes,
he'll be here.
That is something that can help you determine, I'd love to say free agency with normal organizations, but your draft board.
Yeah.
Because if he ends up showing out the last, let's say, four games of the year, because I don't think he's going to play. I'm just assuming this. Maybe I could be wrong. I'm assuming he's not going to play Sunday and Thursday, but then we'll play the next game.
Yeah.
And then hopefully be healthy the rest of the way. That gives him reps. That gives you an idea of what he could possibly be in 2025, and then gives you an idea when you're building your team, where does he fit in your defensive end rotation?
Now, Corey, if it's okay with you, I kind of want to move later in the show now, Ordinary World versus Cowboys World, because there's a lot there. So I kind of want to scout the Commanders right here. But also, this is the micanization of our listeners. From the 817, don't forget that Omar Epps also invented that pen that helps you when you eat kiwi or get stung by a bee to the face.
The EpiPen?
That is what he is going for.
Yeah.
No. Inaccurate.
That is not true.
Yeah, if you have a peanut allergy or any type of nut allergy, you want to carry an EpiPen.
Alec, can you go ahead and give me cut number 7, please, sir?
Eckler lives in the end zone, but this time they give it to Robinson. And he pushes his way in, and will they give it to him? They do. No forward progress whistle. Touchdown, Washington.
Now, next up for the Dallas Cowboys is the Washington Commanders. By the way, remember, in this hour and in the noon hour, we'll be giving away tickets to Cowboys Giants on Thanksgiving. So be listening in for that. Couple things. The Commanders are, we know how good the Commanders have been this year, probably compared to expectations. But they've been really good to their own history. Think about this. With a win in this game, and the Commanders are heavy favorites.
What?
Shut up. With a win.
Remember I told the Houston guy, you want to bet? When he was like, I don't know. I was like, no.
Yeah.
You guys want to cover the spread pretty easily.
So Washington is a 10-point favorite. If they win this game, this will be the first time they've started 3-1 in the division, which is not like a crazy start to the season. Since 2012, it's been 12 years since they started 3-1 in the division. And then think about this. With a win this weekend, they would improve to 5-1 at home. That would be their best home record through 12 games since 1992.
Really?
So the year after they won the Super Bowl, but obviously we're talking about 30 plus years. So it's been more than a decade since they've been this good in division, and almost 30 years since potentially they've been this good at home. So that's, I just wanted to start out by throwing that out there, that if you're wondering how often do the Commanders look like this, the answer is not very. Now, the next part is, I get it.
But that was seriously a ownership change.
Yes.
That completely changed that franchise.
Look, we've talked about it. I don't think Mike has been particularly subtle about the fact that cheering for the Commanders to a certain extent, because it is a real indictment on the Cowboys and a look at how much your franchise can change if you get rid of a toxic owner. And he
definitely was.
Like, yeah, Vince Snyder, my God, absolutely for sure.
Like, he was one of the guys. Agreed. You could say is, look, he's worse than Jerry Jones. Like, you could be as critical as you wanted about Jerry, but Daniel Snyder was a worse owner than Jerry Jones. And if this thing turns around for Washington and they find themselves, let's just say, in the next 8 years in, let's say, two or three NFC championship games and one Super Bowl, I won't even put him as a winning Super Bowl team. You'd go, oh, my gosh, like, this is the answer. The problem is you would never get that answer here. But the answer would be, oh, no, all you do is change the owner from a bad one to a good one. Obviously, you have to draft a franchise-changing quarterback. You have to get a good head coach. There's other things that go with it. But you'd go, oh, my gosh, if Washington ends up being a very good franchise the next decade, it's obvious as day that it was ownership change that changed that organization.
I'm with you. The tough part about that is he didn't really go willingly. For sure. And so that's like a whole different discussion that we will probably have to have. Now, for the Cowboys, Mike McCarthy said, I believe it was yesterday, that he's not going to give up play calling duties. And he said, haven't considered that. Nope, don't like that. That makes sense to me.
What if he had just said, I'm getting fired anyway. Who cares? I mean, might as well just call him.
And that's...
Like, he knows he's done.
I'm Shoddy sure knows you're right.
He's done. They have to do their job, but they know they're done.
And that's the thing that I wonder if Schottenheimer's like, man, I wish you would so I could try to show people what I can do. Because these next 7 weeks feel like an audition for both of them. But at least McCarthy, I'm not saying you should hire him as your head coach, but at least Mike McCarthy can be like, hey, the 3 years before that, we won 36 games and I've previously won a Super Bowl. Like, at least you can point at your resume. For Schottenheimer, it's just going to be like, hey, so this was the last job you had and it didn't go super well this last year. What happened? And I know you can say, well, I didn't get to call the plays, but how's that going to advance you in the process? So I understand why Mike McCarthy's keeping play and calling duties, but I kind of wish that he wasn't so I could get more of a sense for Schottenheimer.
I don't.
Even if it's bad, because you think it's bad?
I think it's the same.
Yeah.
I mean, now, because he's the one that installs it.
Yeah.
And it looks this bad. And if it can't be blocked, he's in charge of that too. Like, that's when he was with the Jets and you had Thomas Jones and Sean Green, that whole bunch that they were doing all that with, they had the talent to block and they ran good. And that was what they were good at. They knew Mark Sanchez wasn't great. So they said, we got to run the ball. And he hasn't been able to replicate that here.
Yeah.
So I don't blame all of that on McCarthy, because that's where that starts.
True.
So.
And it's not like Schottenheimer would show up and we'd be like, hey, we're back. Like, that's not going to happen.
The guy is awesome. And that's the other thing. It always is tough whenever you know that, like, those are good people that you're talking to.
Yeah.
And that you're seeing are probably going to be out.
Now, something to watch for Washington. In this last game, obviously they lost to Philadelphia going back almost a week now. They were only 3 of 12 on third down attempts. So, look, I know sometimes it's a fool's errand, Mike, but when we're putting together, like, Cowboys win because Cowboys lose because, I'm always looking for a deficiency of the other team that's maybe struggled. Now, I know they might be like, hey, the Cowboys will fix that. But I look at those deficiencies that perhaps another team has had. And that was one of the things that popped up to me is Washington had a real trouble converting on third down in this last game. And then you could probably argue this is the most human that Jaden Daniels has looked since the beginning of the rookie season.
I'm actually kind of fascinated that his rib injury has lingered as long as it has. I guess because he's playing through it, it's going to continue to be that way.
Yeah.
And Romo, that year that he dealt with it, it was a whole year thing. It's not like it ever went away. He punctured a lung and all that stuff. So I am interested to see if that ever heals for him and how much that is causing injury for him. But people have seen him now. They know what Kingsbury's doing, and if he's going to continue to be scared to throw downfield like he was in the last game, then he's not going to have the same benefit he has underneath.
I know we're out of time, but just think of this: if the Cowboys were a competitive team and you were fighting for a playoff spot, this week we would be talking about a little bit more. I'm going to bring it up right now. Boy, it's not really fair. You played on Monday night. You travel on the road. And the other team, look, they had a tough road game. They played Thursday night.
But they lost, got a mini bye.
They have more time to prepare while you have one less day to prepare as a normal week. So there's a lot of things working against the Cowboys in this situation, even if the Cowboys were a competitive team.
I'm glad that you brought that up, because even like after that game last Thursday, Austin Eckler was like, now we got some time. Get rested up. Kind of collect your mind and come back in the building. So that is an extra, 4 days that they have to their advantage as well. We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, let's talk Mavs, Pelicans, domination by Dallas, and how they need to take advantage of the schedule ahead. We'll do that next right here on The Fan.
Up by 12 right now. The hit on Luka for the double team. Good ball movement. Marshall attacks baseline, leaves it for Grimes to beat the buzzer. And that is a point.
KNC Masterpiece back here on 105.3 The Fan. Now, y'all, we can talk about this Mavericks game as much as you want. We kind of looked at it as this is a very depleted Pelicans team and you should probably smoke them. Well, pretty much from the word go, you smoked them. You had talked about, Mike, how the Mavericks have consistently fallen behind. And it's not just like in the first 2 minutes, but in the first quarter. I mean, they came out hot. This game did not, to me, feel particularly competitive after the first quarter. And you did exactly what you wanted and you needed to do.
I'm with you. It wasn't, I don't know, it wasn't a super fun game to watch because of the non-competitive, and it looked like they were playing in a lake.
Yeah, you really don't like most of the NBA Cup.
I think it's an absolute joke, and I think they're all lying because the NBA does a good job of telling their broadcasters and everybody around them, this is big, this is awesome, make it big, make it awesome.
Yeah.
And in a way, I think that the broadcast team and everybody's doing a good job of doing what the NBA wants. I think that most people think it's a load of crap, but they're trying to promote something to see if it has any type of legs on it to be like, does this Emirate Cup or whatever it's called, does it, like, can we get it going? Like, does anybody remember the Lakers' successful season last year because they won the stupid cup? No, nobody remembers. But they're trying their best to promote this thing with jacked up courts that look like they should be on Nintendo or whatever.
Right.
I will say last night, Adrian saw, I turned the game on and she goes, oh, is this one of those cup games? And I was like, yeah, and because she saw the court. So that is a signifier that you're like, okay, is there, there might, doesn't feel like there's really anything to us, but other people are like, oh, is there something else on the line tonight?
Mike, for whatever it's worth, maybe closer to their like young target demo, Brandon really liked the Celtics court because we were watching some of the Celtics Cavs. So I mean,
think it is for teenagers who are video gamers.
Yeah. Oh, like, yeah, it's definitely on NBA 2K.
You know, you can, and I think in 2K, when I walk by them, my son's playing those games, you can jack up the court.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
But it was a blast, man. Going back to the game, that was a great win for the Mavericks in this. You totally took care of business. Yep. You didn't let New Orleans think at any point in the second half that they could actually win the game. And so that was a very good job from what I'll consider the Mavs, a veteran team, to make sure that this team, who probably because of injuries, as I thought the Pelicans were going to be a playoff team this year, probably through their injuries, are not going to be a playoff team. And they got to think about what they're supposed to do. with their organization going forward.
I'd be really concerned, yeah.
The Mavericks did a great job. Utah's 3-11. They already lost to Utah this year. So it's not like the Mavs have done a good job of taking care of business with the crap teams. And last night was a great job of taking care of a crap team.
So I'm glad that you said that, because that was the start of a 10-game run where, obviously, just because they're under 500, as you just pointed out with Utah, doesn't necessarily mean you're good to go. But think about this. That kicked off a stretch where New Orleans was 4-10. And when all this started, Miami was at 5-7, Atlanta 6-8, Utah 3-10, Portland 6-8, Washington 2-10, Toronto 2-12. So if you look at it from that perspective, seven games in this 10-game stretch are against sub 500 teams. And I realize they already lost to Utah, but you look at New Orleans, Utah, Washington, and Toronto, we're talking about the worst of the worst in the NBA.
Yeah, and I think that they really need to. I was looking at that schedule and I was really down after the Utah debacle, and I'm like, dude, I keep getting to win loss and just giving them wins against below average teams or average teams, and I'm giving them losses every time they play a good team. And I'm like, you're going to get to mid-January and be 500. So they really need to take care of business against these bad teams and then be better than I think they will be if I'm going to be, hey, every time they play Golden State, they're going to lose. Every time they play Oklahoma City, they're going to lose. Obviously, that didn't happen. They already beat Oklahoma City in a game that I thought that they were going to lose. So you look at it, and if you want to be, I don't know if the Mavericks care to be, led by Luka Doncic, if they want to be a top three seed, which gives you a much better chance of making it back to the Western Conference Finals and the NBA Finals.
Agreed.
You're going to have to figure out a way how to win 52 games, I'm going to assume, or a few more to get to that situation.
I think that's probably fair. And you look at it, they've won three straight. Obviously, the most impressive being the win over Oklahoma City with no Luka. Your next game against Denver clearly is going to be more challenging than the rest, but then you've got just Denver's better than most of the rest of the teams in this stretch. But you just look at Denver and New York and Memphis, depending on how good you actually think Memphis is.
And it just matters who's healthy on their team at that point.
But those are the only three games that I'm like, man, we shouldn't be able to really win those games. I think you should really be able to win the Memphis game. And so I know it doesn't have to automatically go like this, but you've already won three in a row. And in the next nine, seven of the nine look like you really should be able to win those.
Don't we need this for our Metroplex too? Dallas Mavericks.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't matter to you guys. You don't get paid any more money for this. You can capture fans right now. The Cowboy fans are looking for something optimistic to cheer about. And if you're a Cowboys fan and a Stars fan, great, because the Stars, for the most part, are having a great start the year.
Yeah.
The Mavericks are not off to a great start. They are still, if you look at the standings, I don't know all the tiebreakers, they have them in 11th place out of the even play-in situation, even though they're tied with the majority of teams in the play-in situation. But man, if they could, in the next 2 to 3 weeks, as you get to the holiday season, go on a nice winning 7 out of 8 games and putting themselves in kind of that 5 seed, let's say, and you get to Christmas and you're well over 500 and you're playing great basketball, I do think there'll be a bandwagon here after the NBA Finals. But right now, you're like, hey, last night, notwithstanding, great job. Mavericks, great job. But the Utah game, some other games this year, like, hey, do you guys even care that the season started?
Yeah. Yeah. I kind of wonder about that Houston game just a little bit and if that kind of falls into that category. Although, obviously, Houston is showing they got plenty of studs on their team as well. Now, I feel a little bit bad, and we can pivot back into the Mavs if you want, but yesterday we did not do a good job of getting to our mystery audio.
Mm-mm.
So I want to see, Alec, if you can go and play the mystery audio for us right now.
What, sure? You like the City Edition uniforms?
Yes.
What do you like about them?
They say Celtic on.
They say Celtics on them. That is, of course,
that's why I like them.
Joe Mazzulla. Joe Mazzulla also had another quote in the last day or two. Maybe it was yesterday prior to the Cavs game. And somebody asked him about, like, you know, the importance of the NBA Cup. And his first response was, who said that?
Who said what? The important?
Yeah,
it's important?
The important, that it was important. And he goes, yeah, who said that? And so People were like, hold on.
I like this guy even more.
I know.
He's the one human being in the NBA that's speaking the truth about this stupid cut.
I feel like he would be the one person that would be like, I don't care.
Well, he did like it
because
soccer.
Yeah.
He's the soccer guy who liked it.
He would go on.
I don't care. I just want to win every day. I want to win every breath I take.
He talked about like the importance of opportunity and everything like, and gave like a really... Yeah, like a good or better description, but I just love the beginning of that. It said, who said that? And then Joe Mazzulla, what do you like about the City Edition jerseys? I like that they say Celtics on them.
He's such a weirdo.
Is he trying?
I love
is he
him,
trying
though.
To do it, or is he just really responding with real answers?
I think that's just his personality. The one that really put me over the edge on that was the Jaylen Brown conversation. Like, I know he was trying to get out of saying what the Jaylen Brown injury status was. But when the dude asks him, like, oh, have you talked with Jaylen Brown? And he goes, I talk with Jaylen Brown every day. Like, he's going very, like,
to
the letter of what you're asking. And then he goes, oh, did he say anything about his injury? He did.
What did he say?
I can really understand him. He mumbles when he talks. And so, like, in that moment, I thought, he's really smart, but I also just think he's like, no, we won a championship. I'm going to be me.
Yeah, exactly. That is who he is, man. That is for sure.
I think it's totally fair, and that's why I love him. Now, couple more.
I understand him.
Okay. Couple more quick things for you, and they're maybe on the ridiculous side, but I think they're interesting. Mike Tyson against Jake Paul. BetMGM said it was the most bet combat sport attraction they've ever had. It got three times as many bets and four times as much money as any combat event in sports in their sportsbook history. That is freaking wild. And if you wonder why this is going to happen again, because it's definitely going to happen again. In fact, this is going to make you sad, Mike, because I know you have history with this person. Did you see who has now challenged Mike Tyson?
Jim Bowden, the general manager of the Washington Nationals, who does...
You'd like to see that, right? Evander Holyfield.
Oh, come on.
That could be a real fight.
No, he's like 60 also.
But wouldn't they let him like actually punch each other?
We talked to Evander Holyfield.
He's 60, man. He couldn't hear at the event yesterday or Saturday. Yeah. I know that the earpiece wasn't working, so Lennox Lewis had to pass along the message to him.
Yeah.
He didn't sound... I love Evander. We interviewed... He wasn't, like, the most coherent in the interview. You could tell his brain's been hit a whole bunch of times.
Yes.
Okay? His brain is damaged through boxing. Believe it or not...
People's brains get damaged
through boxing as a career. His brain is damaged. Not that Jake Paul's a real boxer, but he is 227 pounds and he does hit.
Yes.
And I don't want to see that. I'll tell you what, that Jake Paul thing, I never seen Jake Paul box before. He's an amateur. You can tell he's an amateur.
And I don't know, like...
He's a showman.
Yes.
Which is, he is in great shape. He is a young man who's, you know, athletic, but that wasn't real boxing to me. And so I'm like, not that I'm like a purist in boxing, but I do miss the days of Evander Holyfield and Lennox Lewis and Riddick Bowe and Mike Tyson. And, you know, you throw in a Michael Moore and George Foreman and Buster Douglas. I don't know. There was, it died, obviously, the heavyweight around, I don't know, early mid 2000s. It died.
And it has had a resurgence of sorts over the last, like, 6 years, but one of the troubles in terms of like
Tyson Fury, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Tyson Fury, Deontay Wilder, it's Anthony Joshua. It's just before it felt like, obviously not Lennox Lewis, but a lot of those fighters were American. And it did feel like it got the American boxing fan more into it. But if you look at like Tyson Fury, Anthony Joshua, they have done big business in Saudi Arabia, in England. And so that's part of the reason. Now, this story might be specifically for Carter. Our Carter, not your Carter, but it is super fun. The Pop-Tart Bowl. You recall the Pop-Tart Bowl? They made the giant Pop-Tart that was going to be...
out of the toaster?
Yes, that was going to be eaten by the team that won. It was so successful that Pop-Tarts has upped the ante. This year, they will have three giant Pop-Tarts. Wildberry, hot fudge sundae, and a mystery fan flavor that will be headed back to the shelves. They'll battle it out.
The fan flavor?
What's that?
105.3 the fan flavor?
I can't confirm that yet. I'm still working on that. But ultimately, only one will be eaten by the Pop-Tart Bowl champs. So I would argue... Yeah!
Do they get to choose, or how does that work?
Don't you want to lose that competition? I don't want to get eaten.
Oh, I mean, no, that's what I'm saying. Does the team get to choose which one they decide to eat? Because I... Look, you know how I feel about Pop-Tarts. I'm not eating that Pop-Tart anyway.
Right.
But my teammates, I'll be happy if they get to eat it.
Pop-Tarts aren't bad. Toaster strudels are way better.
I agree with that.
Oh, man. Toaster strudels are amazing.
Do they have little icing packets with them, too?
Yeah, they did.
They're like, hey, I know it's not good for you. We can make it worse.
And I'd sit there and try and make the design the same way. It never worked out.
Okay.
I'm not good at piping, like they said. Like, isn't that what it is with
yes cake? On the Great British Baking Show, which I actually watch pretty religiously. We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, it's time for Baseball Nuggets with Mike Pashak.
Where are the Rays going to be? And Juan Soto, maybe a Dodger next.
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. We got Baseball Nuggets in just 1 second, but I feel like it's about that time.
Let's give something away!
This is huge.
877, shut up. 881-1053, caller number 9 and 10.
Oh,
will win a pair of party passes to go see the Cowboys play the Giants next Thursday. That is Thanksgiving Day at AT&T Stadium, courtesy of Miller Lite. Now,
remember, you called in.
Baseball Nuggets with Mike Bassick.
All
why
right
do you make promoting things so hard?
What if it would take like 8 minutes for caller 9 to show up, and then you're like, hey, we didn't get to 10 callers?
That would be depressing.
All right, so let's talk about Tampa Bay Rays, or the Tampa Rays. And who cares? In a way, I'm with you. But their stadium did get totally destroyed. And we mentioned this last week, but the Trop is... destroyed in a way. Well, I won't say it that way.
You thought it was crappy before.
It was
right?
A really bad stadium that they shouldn't fix.
Yeah.
Okay. They should just get rid of it.
Which
to
that
be
was
honest,
the plan, right? Wasn't that?
Yeah,
that-
they are. So that was the plan. And reading this article, it's the Rays staying in Tampa is now in jeopardy. And I didn't know this, but it says last month the county commission upended our ballpark agreement by not approving their bonds as they promised to do so. That action sent a clear message that we had lost the county as a partner. The future of baseball in Tampa Bay became less certain after the vote. The article goes on to talk about obviously the hurricane, which has ruined the Trop.
Yeah.
So they're going to play at the Yankees minor league facility this year, which it's a nice ballpark for spring training games. The issue is when you're outside in Florida in July and August, it's pretty much unbearable to play baseball there. Like I did play in Miami outside when they played at the Dolphin Stadium.
Yeah.
Joe Robbie, I think.
I think that is correct.
It's hot. It's humid. You don't get to take a lot of batting practice on the field, one, because of the humidity, too, because it usually rains somewhere between 1 p.m. and 5 p.m. every day in Florida in the summertime. Not like a long rain, but a little bit. And then you deal with rain delays in Miami. Obviously, they don't have to do that anymore, but that was a major part where they thought the fans weren't showing up because of who wants to sit when it's 96 degrees with 180
that makes sense
whatever humidity.
Yeah.
And then there's the possibility of the game getting delayed because of rain in the forecast at 8 p.m. at night. You know, so Tampa's going to have to deal with all of that. I will tell you this, fantasy baseball wise, stay away from almost all Tampa Bay hitters next year. Because it is not an easy place to hit home runs in the spring. It is going to be probably even more miserable, I assume, in the summertime.
Yeah.
So you're not going to have good carry on the ball. It is a park that plays big. So I think if you are, whether you have a dude like Junior Caminero, who's one of their young, hot prospects, or, you know, you name a guy who they have that maybe you're thinking about fantasy baseball, just be careful on what their numbers are going to be. I think offensive numbers will be down for Tampa's team and then will be down in Tampa. But this now opens up that Tampa Rays are not going to be the Tampa Rays much longer. I do think this is going to make a permanent move here. I think they're going to play in Tampa one more year.
And then go.
And then I think that there's a possibility, a strong possibility, that they go to Nashville or Montreal. Now, Montreal needs to build a stadium. Montreal has all the money in the world. Montreal is a major city. They just played in the Trop in Montreal. It was a dump. I played there.
And I feel like those are the two that you've heard in terms of whenever expansion talks come up. So that makes a lot of sense.
But, and I know this, that they've talked about baseball saying we need to relocate Oakland Athletics and the Tampa Bay Rays, or get them a stadium first before we expand, because it does make sense if you're just looking at making a schedule a lot easier, making divisions a lot easier. If you have 32, you get to the NFL standard where we have four divisions.
Yeah.
Each division has four teams, and it just makes everything a lot easier when it comes to playoff situation and all that. Will that happen? I don't think we're close to getting expansion in Major League Baseball, because we don't know where the A's are going to play yet. We think it's Vegas.
That's fair.
We were in Vegas in February. There were no plans at all to start a stadium. And as far as I know today, I have not seen anything following baseball that they have knocked down that old casino, that they have started the construction of a new baseball stadium. So I think it's 50-50 at best. The Athletics end up being the Las Vegas Athletics.
It really, to your point, when we talked about it and asked where it was going to be, and the one of our cab drivers was like, oh, it's going to be right there. And you're like, really? Does it fit in there?
So for the Rays.
It looks like a very small plot of land.
Yeah.
I don't know how quick this is going to happen, but the owner is Steinberg of Tampa. He's a cheap owner. I don't think he wants to be in Tampa. There's way more money in Montreal than there is Tampa. There's way more fans. I get what happened to Montreal in the end. But if you go back to the strike season, they were selling out games. They had Pedro Martinez. They had Larry Walker, if I remember right. They had a lot of good players. They had Marquise Grissom. They had a great team. They were going to beat the Atlanta Braves for the first time in forever. Somebody else was going to win that division.
Yeah.
And the Expos looked like a team that could win the World Series in the strike-shortened season that then – I say strike shortened. It really just ended up being there was it no ended, playoffs yeah. or anything. But I look at it and go, Montreal has way more money. I don't know about, their bonds and voting. But if they got kind of that, it does cost about this now, that $800 million stadium, they could sell out very easily the expensive seats, the suites. The businesses are there. The big time money is there. It's very expensive to live in Montreal. It is a very nice city. Now, I haven't been there in 22 years.
But you liked it when you were
there.
I did.
I thought, wow, what a really nice city. What a really crappy stadium. And so I do think that there's a strong possibility now that we start hearing that the Tampa Rays are going to become the Montreal Expos. That's my opinion. Only my opinion.
And just out of curiosity, if they went to Montreal, it would be...
I would buy a hat so fast.
Okay, because it would be a no-brainer to go back to the Expos, right? Like, you're not going to call them the...
Obviously,
whatever.
There's no race.
I love that Expos hat, there. Man.
But I do think so. And then the other thing, too, is you're not hurting at all the American League East. Yes, Montreal used to be in the National League East. They're staying on the East Coast.
Yeah.
You think about the teams that you'd be playing, the New York Yankees, the Boston Red Sox. You would be fine with that being your, even through expansion, you'd be like, that's good. That makes sense. The problem with Oakland / now just Athletics is moving them to Nashville or moving them to the East really hurts. They need to not only keep them on the West Coast, they need to, and just think about this, Ranger fans, you really need a new West Coast city to take on baseball, because if not, it's going to leave Texas or Houston possibly in the West.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden, when you get expansion, you could see yourself still being in some sort of weird Seattle, LA.
Okay. Yeah.
Situation where you're like, crap, how are the majority of our road games still on the West Coast when we are freaking in the Central time zone? So you need it to end up being like through expansion, which I still think is at least 5 years away, if not 10, is you want it to be your new division being very easily Houston, Texas, Kansas City, and one other team that's close to you. And if Nashville became an expansion
then that
team,
would make,
that could make sense for Nashville, Kansas City, Texas, and Houston to be a very nice, you know, pack of teams. New Orleans, they have AAA. I don't think New Orleans would build a brand new stadium and then support a Major League Baseball team.
From the 469, the implosion of the casino was posted on Facebook last week.
Oh, good.
And from the 903, I just got back from Vegas. The Trop is gone and they're cleaned up and starting the groundwork.
Isn't that weird that the Trop got destroyed by a hurricane? So when you say the Trop, that's part of
the
it goes,
Las Vegas Tropicana Casino.
That's good because there was still, at the end of September, there was still doubt that Las Vegas was going to come through and start building that brand new baseball stadium.
I'm curious about the capacity and everything for that, because like I know what the plans say, but when we drove by, you're like, oh man.
I do think it'll be a smaller stadium.
Yeah.
That maybe it'll be like a sellout will be 33,000, but I don't think baseball minds that as long as they have 33 what you'd consider really nice seats.
Yeah.
And then hey, that's
it. Is the renderings I'm looking at do say 33,000 capacity.
Yeah, and that's I don't think that's the worst thing in the world for baseball. Obviously, they played at a football stadium forever, so.
They did.
Yeah, that's I didn't get to free agency. Maybe I move that along to Mike Likes It.
We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, we're going to do some Gridiron Gravy and power rank the quarterback power rankings next on The Fan.